from the board about that time was that they felt that this was an important conversation. However, with the new board members and a lot of things going on, they wanted to slow that down a little bit to give everybody a chance to kind of get through a couple of kind of the key projects that we're working on now, and just give the new board members a chance to kind of orient themselves. So we've sort of put the brakes on that and are not moving forward with the strategic planning process right now. But plan to bring that back later this year and see, take the board's temperature at that time if they're really ready to engage in that conversation. So not as, I know, not as kind of rapid progress as we had hoped, in terms of moving that forward with getting kind of broad board support and direction, on doing more of that coordination. But in the meantime, you know, we are going to continue to just convene this group. And, you know, to the extent that we, you know, within our existing, you know, capacity can continue to provide increased coordination, we want to do so, but like the idea of doing like a countywide coordinated transportation priority planning process, I think is something we're going to have to hold off until, you know, we have that strategic planning discussion with our board to get their blessing on that. So, that was a major, update that I wanted to share. The second major update is just, you know, on the Yolo 80 project. We're continuing to move forward with that process. The EIR is scheduled to be released in June. And so we're working with Caltrans on making sure we have a robust kind of community engagement, process for that. And then, we're also working on the concept for establishing tolling, which means having both a tolling authority so that we have the ability to toll, and then also doing some kind of the policy development around kind of what a tolling concept would look like. So we're working on that piece as well in partnership with SACOG and Caltrans, with the goal of being able to apply for tolling authority from the California Transportation Commission by the end of 2023. And we're really hoping to do that, again, with our regional partners, not just a Yolo County-focused tolling authority application, but really like a SACOG regional tolling authority application. So that's the goal, and that's what we're working on right now. And we've had several meetings now with SACOG, Caltrans District 3, as well as the local other local agencies in Sacramento, El Dorado, and Placer that are looking at tolling in the kind of midterm, around kind of getting that tolling authority established. So those are my updates. I want to stop and see if there's any questions on any of that. And then hear from other members of the TAC about any kind of updates you want to share. Okay. If there's no questions, then does anybody else want to share any updates for the group? Okay, everybody's just ready to talk about budget.
So, well, I do want to say thank you for organizing that tour with you know, Caltrans officials and SACOG. I think those are important. If we can do that going forward, I think that's going to be beneficial for all our projects. So thank you for pulling that off.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate that. Really, all the credit goes to Brian Avenatt. He did all the work to make that happen, and he's not here, but I will pass that along to him. Thank you. And there is some talk about maybe we try to make that an annual event. If so, you know, to just bring everybody together and look at what the different priorities are. So, yeah, more to come on that. Okay. Any other updates from anybody else? Okay. If not, then why don't we go ahead and jump into the budget conversation, and I will turn it over to Eric to talk about our planned transit service levels for next year.
Great. Thank you, Autumn. As Autumn said, I'm here to provide some technical information about the services that we're looking at doing, and we're recommending that the TAC receive these updates and provide feedback to us. A key component of the budget is always the service plan. And so we have before you the proposed level of service for the FY23-24 budget. This includes increasing service, an additional roughly 9,100 hours from FY22 to FY23. A lot of that improvement is in the Route 42A and 42B improvements to get to 30-minute service all day long. That also includes some service improvements for the West Sacramento local routes, mainly bringing them back to their pre-COVID service levels, increasing the span, in particular on weekends and evenings. It also includes some additions to the Davis Express service, including routes 43, 44, and 230. Again, these are to bring them closer to pre-pandemic service levels. And it includes some service changes on the Woodland local routes, including some proposed changes that we're taking to the board probably early next year. These service changes would change the service and replace the current four routes with two. The service plan also includes an estimation for the revenue service hours associated with both ADA paratransit service and microtransit service, roughly 14,700 revenue service hours for paratransit. And I do believe the total is roughly 16,000 total between the three microtransit services. In your packet, you can find a description of the fixed route service hours and miles table. That's attachment number one, and it does a really good job breaking down the amount of hours and miles that were in the FY22-23 budget and comparing it to the FY23-24 budget. I do also want to note that under the total bus trips, in places, you'll see that there are two sets of numbers for the trips that are being provided, and that is because some of the improvements that we're looking at doing would only go into effect in January, and thus are only for 6 months. I'm here to answer any questions this group may have. I'm hearing no questions. Any comments?
Sorry, I have questions. I was just being polite. And seeing if anybody else have questions first. So one thing is, I know we've had some discussion in the past, I think with Autumn and Eric, about federal stimulus helping the budget, or kind of comments about what other transit agencies are doing. Are we still, is there federal stimulus money that's backing up this budget or in some way contributing to the budget? That, I mean, I guess probably my big question is, you know, and if so, when will that be not available, and what kind of impact will that be, you know, in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, how many years?
Yeah, Leo, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so I'll be happy to. So it's a great question, sort of previewing what I was going to talk about. We are, in the current year, we're only, we budgeted a relatively more modest amount, about $1 million of our remaining $6 million, $1.3 million. We've decided to budget the rest of our federal stimulus funds, or we're proposing to, provided our board accepts, in next year's budget, about $4.4 million. Which reduces our need, since that's 100% money, it's primarily reducing our need for sort of 50% money. So in the future, we are definitely going to need to make up for that stimulus funds in order to maintain this level of service. And so it does mean that we can continue we don't have to take, you'll see in terms of the proposal for LTA and STF, we're not asking for a very large amount more of those funds in this next budget. But in budget the following year, there'll have to be some real choices made about how to balance that budget.
Okay, sorry. Can you clarify? I heard you say 1.3 and then 4.4 is, you said 1.3 is for the current year and 4.4 is next year, or can you clarify that?
Yeah, I'm just, I want to confirm the, it was 4.4 in the budget year, and in the current year, I'm just confirming, I believe it was about 1.3 million.
But ballpark, yes, that's right. 1.3 in the current year, yeah.
Okay, so this budget proposal in front of us assumes 4.4 million of federal stimulus money that will not be here the year after.
That's right.
Ooh, okay.
I do have a comment. It's 4.4 million of CARES Act funding.
Okay. Sorry, not knowing my federal acronyms, I assume that's one-time money from the federal government.
That's right.
Okay. So if you divide it by four, you know, Davis, Woodland, West Sac, and the county, and I'm sorry, Winters, I mean, that's like a $1.1 million hit to our budget the year after this budget year. On average.
Yeah. That's a little bit. Go ahead,
Leo. Well, to the extent that we are able to, it depends partly on our allocation of the ongoing federal funds, transit funds, which are operating are at a 50% match level, and for maintenance are at an 80% match. So if we have sufficient of those ongoing federal transit funds, then the trade-off would be more like half of that, or perhaps slightly under half of that.
But CARES Act, we're assuming in this budget there's $4.4 million of CARES Act in the budget for next year. It won't be in there the following year.
That's right.
That's correct. I want to clarify that in terms of the CARES Act funding, you know, we have been sort of trying to use it up slowly, knowing that it's one-time funds, and which is why we only used a million and change last year. But what's happened is that we're now, the feds are saying, no, really, you need to use all this money or we're taking it back. So we also have other allocated revenue that we have kind of in savings, if you will, because of the fact that we've cut so much service early in COVID, and we have kind of a surplus that is built up. So last year we also used some of that surplus. So we've been using some surplus and some of this one-time CARES money. So going forward, it's not like this 4.4 million is not all going to need to be backfilled with TDA next year. We also have additional surplus funds that are, you know, that we have in reserve that we can also use. As well, with the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure law, some of our 5307 funds, we know that those allocations are going up over the next few years. We also don't know what's going to happen with TDA over the next few years. So to say that there's $4.4 million here that all of a sudden is going to come out straight out of TDA next year, it's not that simple. It is true, though, that we have been coasting with stimulus funds for a few years now, and you all have gotten to have more of those TDA funds as a result. So once these two dry up, you know, that does mean that more of the TDA funding is going to have to come back to transit. But I don't think we're in a position to be throwing around numbers about what exactly that means next year or future years. We're just not there.
Okay.
Can I clarify that the current year budget was actually about $1.97 million was what was budgeted. We'll see whether we actually draw all of that down. It may be that we can draw less of it. But that included both the urban area 5307 CARES Act funds and rural area 5311 CARES Act funds, to be precise.
Got it. Okay, so maybe if this makes sense to me, I'll throw it out there. So my understanding is we have maybe, I'll just throw out 5307 or 5311 money that maybe we can't even use because of the match percentages. So, and that money isn't going away like the CARES Act money. I mean, CARES Act, we're probably facing use it or lose it at some point. And 5307 and 5311 have a little more lifespan to them. Mm-hmm. Is that a reasonable statement? Yeah. I mean, just general. Okay. So I would like to know kind of what that means from, I mean, I think, I don't know if it was Leo or you, Autumn, said, hey, but probably 50% of that money may not be available in future years. So, you know, basically if we go with the service levels that are proposed in this budget in 2 or 3 years, we're gonna get a hit. That hit's probably not gonna be 4.4 million. It's gonna be closer to 2 to 2.5. Is that a all things being equal?
So again, I don't want to put numbers. I don't want to put future speculative numbers out there because we don't have those numbers. And also, mm-hmm. we're actually not really talking about the current agenda item at the moment. So you know, right now we're really talking about the TDA STA allocations, which is the next agenda item. Which if everybody's ready to just go there and doesn't really have any feedback on our planned service levels, that's fine. But I did want to see if there's any kind of other questions or comments on the planned service levels or, you know, why we're proposing what we're proposing other than price concerns about TDA money. Yeah, Joe?
And just because I'm curious, how is the TransDev operator situation looking like to promise and implement these changes?
You want to take that, Eric?
Yes. Jeff, we've been working real hard with TransDev, and I think we're getting to a good place with them finding out how the new system of hiring people needs to be. Right now, we have the amount of drivers we need to operate our current service. And we have 7 in training and another, I think, 3 or 4 applications, if I remember correctly from our meeting. With all of that being said, I think the most promising thing that I've seen in all of the discussion in all of the improvement is that we've had a higher percentage of those people both accepting jobs and then also getting through training and then staying on. So, I think we're going in the right direction. So that's the hope. We are also notifying, you know, we're trying to be good partners with TransDev and provide great information about, you know, what services are down the road to give them plenty of lead time.
One thing I did want to note is that for the 42AD expansion, that's a 30-minute headway for the rest of the day. That's not planned, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, until January. So right. it's only 6 months of next year's budget that includes that. So there's some ramp-up time. We're not assuming we would be implementing that right away on July 1.
Correct.
Thanks for that. I just would add in a similar situation over here where – and our workforces are substantially different, but we are seeing workforce reliability improve where people are now following through with employment action, where we were seeing a lot of people apply and they never show up or interview and not accept jobs. So that seems to have waned in the last few months for us, too.
Great. That's great to hear, Jeff.
Are there other questions for Eric on the service improvements? I had a couple things I just wanted to note. You know, one is, you know, for the Express Bus service, we had actually budgeted last year for most of these changes, but we just haven't moved ahead with them because of our lack of available drivers, and we decided to prioritize the new drivers for the Route 42 service increases rather than for the Express Bus increases. The one change, though, is we are proposing bringing back the Route 44, which is the South Davis Express, and that's in response to some of the concerns and feedback that we received from the community about with the changes to the Route 42, that the Route 42 no longer stops in South Davis, combined with the fact that we discontinued the South Davis Express, there was no longer any YOLO bus stops operating in South Davis, and so we had a board conversation several months ago about this and also with our Citizens Advisory Committee where they were supportive of bringing back some amount of limited express bus service to South Davis. And so that's what you see in here. And so I just wanted to kind of just touch on that a little bit to clarify some of the backstory there.
I had a question. really quick. Just some clarification. So on the six route service table, the dash is like a range of, or is it a change from last year?
Yeah. No. Stephanie, what it is to show that for 6 months of it, you would see 12, like, for example, let's take the 37th. It says 12 loops Monday through Friday. That would be 12 loops starting July. And then in 6 months, in January, is when we're looking at implementing that service. So it would change to 15. So it's just trying to show the difference that the service increased halfway through the year.
Okay, I understand.
Great.
Okay, if there's no other questions, then why don't we go to Leo's presentation. Go ahead, Brad.
Sorry, I do have a question. I remember when there was discussions kind of pre-pandemic about the 42 going to 30-minute headways. I thought there was a lot of back and forth, and then kind of the way it ended up was, oh, it's just during peak hour. Is there, ridership that justifies doing 30-minute headways kind of off-peak, or what's the... Can you go add a little more to the basis of that decision?
Sure, I'll start, Eric, if you want to chime in. The board's recommendation, you're absolutely correct in your memory of YOLOGO. It said, let's start with 30 minutes during the peak hours and then 45-minute headways the rest of the day. And so that's what we implemented this year. We did see a significant, and it said, to start with that and then see how ridership responded. And we have seen a very strong increase in ridership in response to that. When we had a board workshop on the kind of status report of how the 42 service changes were going, and that's where they did express the support for bringing back the South Davis Express. And as well, they indicated, that they would be very interested in seeing it going to 30-minute headways all day because the 45-minute headways thing was confusing for riders, and there's some inefficiencies involved in doing a 45-minute headways versus 30-minute headways. And so it's in response to that board conversation that we decided to put this in here in terms of going all the way to 30 minutes all day, which was, of course, the original YOLOGO recommendation. There was not a board action that was taken. That was just the direction that we see. That was not that was an informational item, but that was the feedback that we got from the board at that time.
Do we have any information? I realize most of the ridership we're looking at compared to last year is going to be, of course, great because we're coming out of the pandemic. Do we have ridership numbers from pre-pandemic, kind of now, or pre-pandemic to now?
Yeah, those numbers, we have those in our monthly ridership reports do include our pre-pandemic average ridership. And we can forward those to you, Brent.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? All right. If not, let's go to our next agenda item, which is Leo and the use of STA and LTF to support the new budget.
Thanks, Autumn. I'm going to be speaking from page 11 of the packet that was sent out. And I'm sure all of you are familiar, but we're talking about the allocation of LTF, local transportation funds, and state transit assistance funds, STA, that was just on March 16th, was approved by SACOG. And STA funds come from diesel fuel, and LTF from a 0.25% of the general sales tax collected statewide. And the allocations are both based on the change in the projected amount that will be collected under those, and also changes in the population estimates for the different jurisdictions, which is why some of the numbers go up and down by different percentages for the different jurisdictions. And in this period, compared to last year, I think both Winters and Yolo County went up in terms of their population percentage for Yolo County, which is why they had different especially for the LTS. So overall, the service area was allocated $17.6 million in STA and LTS funds. And that was in 2022-23. And in 2022-24, the combined amount rose to $18.3 million, so about a 4% increase. And there's a table, the first table in the packet, shows how it looks for each jurisdiction, if you want to see for both the STA and the LTF. The allocation methodology that we're proposing for how to split these funds is that the STA funds, since they are really completely transit-oriented, are the first ones being used to support the YCTD transit operations. And so we're proposing that whether it went up or down, that that tranche is part of the formula coming to YCTD. And we're also proposing that the change in the LTF funds be shared proportionately compared to last year between the jurisdictions and YCTD. So those jurisdictions which saw a decrease in LTF, like Davis going down by 5%, Woodland going down by 3.6%, those would have their share coming to YCTD reduced by the same percentage, and those seeing it increase would have it, we would both share in the increase. And the result of that formula would have the contribution to our budget, to the YCTD budget, going up from $8.56 million in the prior year to $9.1 million in the current year, or rather the budget year, 2023-24, or about a 6% increase. And what this is funding, so in terms of what our budget requirements are, so our budget is funded from quite a mix of federal funds, the 5307 funds we're proposing to use, a substantial chunk, as we mentioned, of the CARES Act funds, and also we get funds from the Yocha Dehe Vinton Nation that runs the Cash Creek Casino, also provides a chunk of funds that supports YCTD's administrative costs. So the LTF TDA is just a portion of the overall budget. Moving to the proposed budget, what we're looking at is that the total budget would, this is the operating budget, leaving aside capital projects. We're proposing that the budget be $20.2 million, which is a rise of $2.4 million from the current year's operating budget. This is shown in Table 2. So the LTF and STA increase would only be, it's only about 500,000 of that 2.4 million increase. The balance of the increase is coming from drawing down the CARES Act funds and the other funding supports to the budget. The increase in the budget is personnel representing about a half million of it. This includes two new FTE that we would expect to be largely grant funded. And we probably would not hire unless we actually receive the new grants that we're anticipating. There's the increase in the fixed route is about 700,000, microtransit 500,000, and paratransit 900,000. There's been a substantial increase that actually reflects the current year demand for paratransit, but just a relatively modest increase from what we're actually seeing. So the actual paratransit use is quite a lot more this year than what we budgeted for. But we're still fine in terms of our current year funding availability for it. So the final point I wanted to make is that, which was just made before thanks to the previous comments, that this does indeed get balanced with $4.4 million in CARES Act funds. We will need to backfill that funding source in future years. There are a variety of strategies for doing so, including other federal grant funds being part of that. But the need for the LTF funds might increase to maintain this level of service in the future. And that's just something to be aware of. And happy to answer any questions or hear any comments regarding this. One more thing I would like to say, I say we'll be presenting the full proposed project budget as well at our board meeting in May. But one of the significant, we do intend to keep on maintaining our fleet. And so that project budget will include hopefully replacing two of our buses in the coming year. But again, that's not reflected in this operating budget.
All right.
I definitely have a question. I understand if other people did. Hey, I know we've had some discussions. I mean, we have a sales tax consultant to give us sales tax numbers and kind of the predictions. Well, I think some of it's actual data for current and then predictions for the next 2 years is that sales tax is going to drop some. Not great recession type dropping, but some dropping. And my understanding is the LTF money is based on sales tax, but it's kind of delayed by a year or two. Do we have any projections on what the LTF is going to look like in future years? So I guess my overall concern there is that the city is experiencing, you know, a general drop, or we're seeing a drop from our consultant. Are you seeing the same, or any commentary on that?
Thanks for bringing it up. It is part of the sort of longer-term planning contingencies we have to be concerned about. We have not done our own modeling. We're really relying on the State Department of Finance and SACOG in terms of the estimates they provide us. And so I don't have an independent estimate of that.
Yeah. So does SACOG or the state give any estimates, or they just give you the numbers they have in front of them?
I don't know if anyone knows more than I do about this, having been part of it. In that particular action by the SACOG board, they didn't talk about future estimates as far as I'm aware.
Okay. I mean, sorry, when I say the numbers they have in front of them, it's whatever this year's allocation is. They don't estimate beyond this year, basically.
Okay.
I mean, my overall concern is, you know, what happens in fiscal year 25. So, I mean, I know we don't have an exact number when you have balance not having CARES, but we're kind of holding other 5307, 5311 money in the bank, and we know that's coming, but we know that, you know, we're going to have a drop, probably a pretty significant drop. I guess my other thing is that combined with a number of the proposals for service, we're only paying for 6 months. I mean, the biggest one is 42A and 42B. We're only paying for 6 months of that service. So, and then you add to that sales tax, you know, concerns with sales tax. I mean, 50 fiscal year 25 could be a pretty significant drop for all of us when we combine those three pretty significant costs. I would say not Woodland's issue, but I know there's a number of routes in here for Davis and West Sac that are also 6 months only, and so you're going to face a bigger hit because of that, because you're only paying, you know, generally speaking, which budget year, you're only paying half of the service, and then, you know, the following year you're going to get hit even harder when you have to pay for the full year there. So, you know, I think there needs to be some level of understanding from the jurisdictions of what this is going to look like in fiscal year 25. So right now, I mean, it looks pretty good. I mean, most of us, I think, are getting a similar amount of money we had last year, and which arguably is historically, you know, pretty good numbers. But I know we talked to our finance department after these meetings and after we get the budget, and I think the message for me is if this proposal moves forward, a year from now, it's going to be pretty painful. So I guess my, you know, I'll be expressing that to my YCZ board rep, and I guess my concern, and my city manager, and I guess my concern is, this is great for today, but when we see the budget impacts for each of us in a year, I don't want to be in a situation where we've added all this service, and then a year from now we either have some pretty significant financial issues, or we're having to cut service that we just added a year earlier. So I think that's kind of my comment overall, big picture. Let's see. possibly a follow-up conversation. I am concerned about the trend with paratransit. I know for Woodland, that's going from 500,000 to 800,000, which not a huge deal today, and I think that's but I am concerned that we're a pretty significant share of that, so maybe that's a side discussion about, you know, that number being so big and Woodland's percentage being so big. I think we'd want to have a side discussion on that. Probably another side discussion is, you know, concerned with kind of how things went with Woodland's transition with microtransit. And some of these conversations, Autumn, you weren't necessarily a part of. I think this is kind of the previous administration, but when we talked about microtransit, it was microtransit and, you know, at most two buses for the intra-city service, and now what you've proposed is three, so we're paying about 70% of the service we were for the fixed route intra-city. And so just concerned about that. And I think that's it for me.
Hey, Eric, did you want to talk a little bit about some of the changes that were that we've been doing with the paratransit operations and, you know, in response to that? I think we've also really noticed how much the numbers are going up in terms of the paratransit ridership, and some of that has to do with, like, an aging population, you know, which, you know, we know we're seeing statewide and very much so here in Yolo County. So we just have more people that are qualifying, but we also have been making some changes to our how we manage our paratransit service to try to address some of that. Maybe you could speak to that, Eric.
Yeah, currently staff is working, the planning staff is working on an update and an implementation of the of new sets of paratransit policies. I think the big thing is making sure that there's clear communication in all of the documentation that we provide about the use and needs, the need and use of those services. And so we did this back in 06 and in 08 and did see some minor decreases in ridership due to people understanding what they can and can't do with paratransit services. So staff is working on that. We will have a new ADA we call it Rider's Guide, that will be out, and we will probably at that time also look at doing a registration of all of our passengers at that point.
And Eric, didn't we also implement use of new scheduling software for paratransit trips? It was being scheduled by hand, and then, so we think there was some opportunity for better efficiency in terms of combining trips, right? Getting
A little bit, but we have just seen a huge increase in ridership that has caused things to need the additional service too.
The ridership, when ridership goes up, but, you know, hopefully we're doing that ridership as most efficiently as possible by making sure we have as many people in the buses that we're combining trips whenever we can so that, you know, we're getting more passengers per revenue hour. You know, using those trips. So I think, I think we're very much aware that this is happening. And I will also add that I think that this is actually a statewide and possibly even national trend, that there's just more people using paratransit, I think, as a response to the pandemic. People feel more comfortable in a smaller vehicle. And so those who are, you know, and particularly because we know that the population that is served by paratransit is also a population that is disproportionately impacted by COVID. And folks for whom the pandemic is not over, right, because they're at high risk. So I think there's some bigger forces that are happening out there. Other questions? Yeah. I'm sorry, I thought I heard somebody starting to speak.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead with Vin. We haven't heard from Vin much.
This is my first time at this meeting. I know Todd's on spring break. And I actually share some of Brent's concerns about the future. Our supervisor, you know, you may some of you may be familiar with him. Supervisor Lucas Perrix is on the Yellow TD board, and he's our newest supervisor. So he may have some questions about you know, the increase, and especially noting that predominantly it's in our sheriff admin services. So I would just say be prepared with an explanation. How did we arrive at this, significant increase? I know the amount retained by us is going to go up, you know, due to LTF, but, were we not paying our fair share historically, as far as the county's concerned?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ben, and I'm actually trying to remember, why it was so low last year for the county, because for some reason, not even the full FTA was allocated to YCTD in this current year's budget. And I think that was because last year there was just, we didn't split it up between FTA and LTF, and we made a share of the increase of both of them to YCTD, and Yolo County was so low before that even when increasing, it was less than, I think in prior years it might have been the FTA amount, but with all the increases, it ended up being less than even your full FTA. And so in this year, we were sort of more equalizing it to the way the other jurisdictions, to have it reflect the full FTA coming to YCTD, since that's really purely transit funds. And then on the LTF side, using the same principle that was used for the other jurisdictions of sharing the increase. But because you were so low in the current year budget, that looks like a higher increase in this year's proposal.
Yeah, like I said, I'm okay with, you know, with the budget as presented. As Brent has mentioned, I am concerned about the future. If there's going to be $1 million hit to us, then that's going to impact our ability, to function as far as our maintenance services throughout the county. That being said, we also have a new board member, so I would highly suggest that you be prepared to address, similar questions from my supervisor. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Vin, for that. That's helpful. I want to just take a step back and share some of the context around, because we have a number of folks who are kind of relatively new in this meeting and in this space, which is that when it comes to both the FTA and the LTF, these are funding that are prioritized for transit. This is the state's transit program. The FTA can only be used for transit. LTF is priority for transit, and any unused transit funds that are not needed for transit do go then to the member jurisdictions. But, just to be really clear, we are an outlier in the fact that we consistently for the last few years, more than 50% of the LTF in Yolo County has gone to the member jurisdiction that is not used for transit. We are the biggest amount by far in the SACOG region. Most of the counties in the SACOG region, 100% of this money does go to transit operations. And in the Bay Area, all 9 counties in the Bay Area, 100% of this money goes to transit operations. So we are the outlier in terms of using this money for streets and roads. It's very uncommon. I hear you guys. It's the way that it's been for a while. And, particularly the last few years, because we've had, the COVID recovery funds, you all have been able to use this money for your budget, and we get that. And, we're not, there's no, the changes that we've proposed here are direct changes directly in response to the feedback that we've received from our board and from our riders. Nothing that you're seeing in here is something that we came up with out of the blue. And that's what I wanted to talk through. Why are we proposing bringing back the South Davis Express? Why are we increasing the Route 42? It's because that's the feedback we've heard from our board. Now, yes, they are in a very difficult position because they sit in both. They have to straddle both their role as YCD board members and also their role as working with you on your streets and roads budgets and public works And that's a very difficult position for them to be in, and I don't envy them that at all. But the transit in this country is facing a fiscal cliff. I'm sure, you all have heard of the efforts that the big transit agencies, they're all running out of money this year. FACRT is cutting service this year. And there's a huge lobbying effort to try to get more state and federal money for transit. Because we're so small and because we've had, we haven't brought back service as rapidly as others, we are not in that position now. And we're not going to be in that position next year. We're not out of money. We're not going to be out of money next year. But the stimulus money is running out, and it is going to mean some belt tightening all around. And I fully anticipate that this year is going to be more difficult than this year. So I just appreciate the dialogue with you all about this. And, we want to be partners and good partners. We recognize everybody has needs here, and that none of this money is going to waste. The money that you guys use is not going to waste, and it's going to fund really important priorities for your communities. And so, sit down and talk with us, and let us know what your concerns are, and we want to work with you to make sure that, what does come to our board, has that we fully address any concerns that you have. Brent, did you have other questions or comments?
I would say, my understanding when we talk about us being an outlier or not, my understanding in the LPS language, the urban counties like the Bay and Sacramento aren't even allowed to use LPS. It's the rural counties that actually use it. So I don't know what the numbers are for Yuba, Sutter, and counties north of here, but typically the counties that are allowed to use LPS, and this was in the authorizing legislation from like 1970, it's rural counties that are allowed to use it for other purposes besides transit outside of an unmet needs process.
So I can answer that if you'd like. Would you like me to answer that question?
Sure. I just feel like to say that the Bay Area doesn't use it, well, they've never been allowed to use it, my understanding, and that was never really the intention. It was really for the rural counties, which were kind of a halfway rural county, but technically meet the definition of a lot
of. So it was counties that had less than 500,000 people when the law was passed, which included vast swaths of the Bay Area. So the only two counties in the Bay Area that always had 100% were San Francisco and Alameda, my understanding, possibly Santa Clara as well. Solano County, Napa, Sonoma, Marin, Contra Costa, all were in the same position, San Mateo. They all now do 100% of their SCA, goes to transit. In the SACOG region, Sacramento is the only county that is mandated to have 100% of their LTF go to transit. But in El Dorado and Placer counties, 100% of their CDA does go to transit. And in Yuba and Sutter, I'd have to check, but it's less than 50%. We are the highest. Yeah. So I can send all the numbers over. I have them from last year. And we can also take it offline if nobody else is interested. But I think this is an important dialogue, and Brent, you've had a lot more experience with this, and so I always appreciate hearing your concerns, and I think want to make sure that we address them. So do you guys want to do a follow-up meeting? How do you want to proceed from here? We're just about out of time, but do we want to do another meeting? Because I'm hearing there are some concerns. And, we're happy to schedule an additional meeting if that's helpful. Or we can also do it offline, one-on-one, whatever makes the most sense. So the timeline...
I know when these kinds of issues happen in the past, it's usually not this group that's resolving those issues. It's usually, city managers and you, Autumn, that are resolving those issues, because it quickly becomes a finance issue. So, I'm forwarding my comments to my city manager, and not at all as a sense of taking it over anybody's head or anything, but I just, this group usually is the group that's like, sure, transportation, great. You know, as we forward stuff to our finance department and they get a hold of it, then, you know, then they have commentary. So, I think probably better to, I mean, we have monthly meetings with you. I'm sure we'll have more discussion there. I think it's, I don't know if this group is necessarily going to resolve these issues.
Okay.
But, you know, I, you know, defer to some degree with, you know, the other representatives from the other cities.
Okay. Do you want me to schedule a meeting with the city manager? Is that the best
way? Let me share my thoughts with Ken. It might be, and I'll ask his suggestions on, you know, kind of next steps. And, you know, would it be better just to say you meet with city manager's group or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, sorry, just asking that same question a little bit to Ryan, then Stephanie and Kirk, you know, how much are you guys involved in, you know, conversations with city manager, finance, you know, to have commentary on, you know, what a next step would be? From my perspective, I'm going to just forward my comments to the city manager and, you know, get their input.
So I'm in the same kind of situation. I mean, we've been preparing our budgets, have been waiting to see what these numbers are going to be because it's a factor in what we're trying to do. I share a lot of the same concerns, especially about 24, 25 and what that's actually going to look like, but there's a lot of unknowns. I will be preparing a memo and forwarding it on to my director and the city manager as a follow-up to this meeting.
I'm kind of in the same boat. City of West Sac uses our LCF funding to support our microtransit service, so I spend a lot of time waiting for these numbers to come out, and I'm looking forward to how much we can use to allocate to an increasingly costly microtransit service. I tend to, after this meeting, I will write a memo to my manager and our community development director, and then I let them take it from there.
I don't know if Kirk wanted to chime in on that. I will just say, you know, we have this process of meeting with you all is within our bylaws as far as the budget process, you know, that we have this meeting with you and provide this information to you by the end of April, technically, when we're supposed to have the budget to you guys. But if there's a better process going forward, definitely open to your suggestions on how to do this. I've kind of just honored the process that had been established before, but if you feel like there's a different group of people that ought to be part of this conversation rather than the regular TAC, again, like, however, you know, makes the most sense to have these, to work this out. Because, I mean, of course, like, ultimately it's all going to go to the board and the board can work it out, but as much as possible, I think we all, you know, all of our interests are served by as much as possible, trying to get on alignment at a staff level if we can. And so anyway, just to say, I know we're out of time, but I'm happy to take your suggestions on how to improve the process.
I do have a suggestion. I've been involved in, you know, by example, when I used to be at West Sacramento, when we had budgetary impacts on regional SAN or, you know, sanitary sewer treatment. I think in the future may be helpful with this meeting for us to maybe include some finance folks. That way, I see this as a, you know, a heads up, right? We're all eagerly waiting for the information, and the sooner we get it to our, you know, finance department, the more they can prepare it for, right? So I was not aware, but I think maybe in future years, I may invite our, CFO to this meeting, designee or somebody, you know, from our finance department to join this meeting so they can start analyzing the impacts to our overall budget. So I think that might be helpful.
Okay. That's great. Happy to do that.
So from my historical perspective, you guys are actually doing like 3 weeks better than I have been for 20 years. Usually we would get a budget document April 30th and an email, here you go. And I know for our finance department that was always problematic. We try to estimate based on, you know, what the conversations we had about service level changes and stuff like that. Earlier is better. Hearing in mid-April is really appreciate that, and that's a lot better than the end of April. So just anything you can do earlier is great. But thanks for what you've done this year.
Well, thanks, Brent. I appreciate it. Yeah, and just so you guys know, we don't get the numbers from SACOG until, I think it's the March board meeting. We're not sitting on this information for 6 months, you know. We act on it as quickly as we get it, so. Yeah. Okay, well, I know we're out of time. So I guess in terms of next steps, and then you guys are all going to do your internal thing, and then again, just let me know if there's follow-up conversations with your finance folks or city managers that you want to have. Brent, I know that we'll be talking. I actually have to reschedule next week's meeting. Unfortunately, I have a doctor's appointment now, but we'll make it happen. But anybody else, Vin, you know, Stephanie, Ryan, Kirk, let me know. We're happy to have follow-up conversations with your finance folks or city managers. Just let us know. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye.